Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Thunderdome Metal Reviews. I'm Gabe Cooper. This is a very special episode, and I'm here with David, Ben, and Tracy. How are y'all doing?
Doing good.
Be better if I was flying high again.
Man, I was going to use that one. I do feel like a believer in what we're doing here tonight.
Well, from all that talk, I mean, y'all might just want to leave me alone. I don't want your promises anymore because rock and roll is my religion and my law. Won't ever change. May think it's strange. You can't kill rock and roll because it's here to stay.
Well said.
Indeed. Very well said.
Indeed. Preach, Brother Gabriel.
Amen.
So, yes, as you have probably figured out by now, because you have eyes and can see the album cover, and you have ears and can hear us doing our renditions, we are doing the second studio album by Ozzy Osbourne, Diary of a Madman, released on November 7th of 1981, recorded in Ridge Farm Studios in Rusper, England. Runtime of 43 minutes and 19 seconds, also released on Jet. Max Norman, Ozzy Osbourne, and Randy Rhodes were the producers. The band at the time of recording, Ozzy Osbourne lead and backing vocals, Randy Rhodes on guitars, Bob Daisley uncredited on bass, and Lee Kerslake uncredited on drums, because of course, as the Ozzy and Sharon Osbourne thing goes, Rudy Zarzo was credited on bass but did not actually record, and Tommy Aldridge was credited on drums but did not actually play.
So is this the edition that's on Spotify is the one that they removed them from and haven't re-released it since then?
I know that they did do the same thing where like they didn't have those guys re-record it and re-release it. They were just credited in the original release. Although that was one of the reasons that there was later a lawsuit. I don't know if they did a re-record. Actually, I guess they did in the 2002 reissue. They had Robert Trujillo and Mike Gordon do the bass tracks on that. So, yeah, I can't say whether they have undone that because I don't know. So that was a long answer to your very simple question.
Well, I mean, it explains it.
Yeah. Actually, I can see that in 2011, the original tracks were restored. So.
Yay, copyright fuckery. So I feel like this album's a little more campy than the one we've done previously. Like, even if that could be such a thing. I mean, just looking at the album artwork makes it much more obvious that it's campier. And you still get Ozzy and Randy Rhodes as like the forefront of everything with the bass and guitar and drums kind of in the back row here. But this is Randy Rhodes' last album with him.
Yes, you can definitely tell in the film it's not him. And the 80s-ness only goes higher and higher.
It's really interesting, too. I think this album actually sounds more 70s, even, than the one before that's just like at the beginning of the 80s. It's really, there's some really cool things on here, but I think it's unfortunately very uneven. The distribution of good stuff to like cheesy and weird and bad stuff is not great.
I think it sounds 70s. I think it's the next one that gets very 80s. I think Randy Rhodes disappearing and that pivot, it just goes full 80s in a way that this isn't yet.
There's more bleep bloops, maybe.
There's bleep bloops happening. The guitar, it's just, we'll get into it. We're not talking about that. We're talking about this one and all of its various little dolls.
Did you guys hear at all also like kind of a new wave of British heavy metal in here a little bit?
I didn't see that.
More of the Judas Priest, British Steel, like new wave of British heavy metal, but you don't hear like the twin guitar attacks that you associate with like Iron Maiden.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I think that, and this is also released fairly quickly after the original, which is, you know, we've talked about it, like the pace at which people would release albums back in the 70s and 80s was just like incredible. And I think that Ozzy is famous for not writing his own lyrics, and the writing on this album feels incredibly uneven.
Just the lyrics, you mean?
Not just the lyrics. I mean, like, the lyrics primarily, but also just, you know, some of the riffs and stuff. I mean, the guitar work on this is, it's still Randy Rhoads, so it's still excellent throughout. The bass and the drums are okay, but I just don't think the entire compositions, I don't think there is as many good songs as were on Blizzard of Oz.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Same here. And it's interesting, you know, just the whole writing credit on that follows the Ozzy Osbourne albums compared to like what we know he didn't write for Black Sabbath compared to any because the Ozzy Osbourne, and like it's almost all giving credit to Ozzy for the most part, with some to Randy Rhoads, which that especially takes a turn for the worse following after this in the sense of who gets writing credit and stuff. And it's weird knowing that Ozzy doesn't really write that much music himself.
That's not entirely uncommon in the, I mean, in the music industry. It was actually in the singles era, which is the era before this, like the 50s and 60s. If a really big artist was going to cut your track, he could demand writing credits. So a lot of the stuff that like Elvis Presley has writing credits for, he didn't actually write. It was just like he was Elvis, so he'd get them, which just increased his share of the profits. And I think Ozzy, as the interpreter of the song, is doing a lot of the same thing. And a lot of that comes from
Sharon,
like her being a lifer, because her dad was, I think, a record executive. I could be wrong on that, but he was involved in the music industry somehow. So her knowing the business in and out and really looking out for Ozzy in that way.
So,
to the detriment of a lot of the musicians that Ozzy worked with.
So that's correct. I'm unfogging some like VH1 Behind the Music video I saw back in like the early 2000s on that. It's like Ozzy was married and Sharon's dad was his manager at the time, I think. And then him and Sharon started hooking up. And she became his manager a couple years after this, I believe. But I think that is where Sharon and Ozzy met, is through her dad.
She's Jailbird.
I think you're right, but I don't know that her dad was his manager. That I don't know. You could very well be right. I don't know. But
yeah, this one, back to the writing on this and the playing, this album is very much more uneven in terms of spread of what's good and what's not. Like you don't have, like you see with some albums, where like the first half or the A side is super heavy, the B side you can skip. This one's like a good track, skip, a good track, skip, skip, a good track, skip, good track kind of deal. Like it's very, it has its moments.
And I assume they toured after the first album. This came out quick. November 7th, 1981.
Yeah, so like
18 months.
Blizzard came out in March. So, I mean, on the US side, it came out in the same year.
Should we move on to tracks or?
Just because there's probably some people who don't know, we should probably touch on the death of Randy Rhoads, which occurred during the touring.
I didn't know if you want to do it for this album or in the next
one. Let's do it here.
It was, you know, I think it might have been in the touring for this album.
It was in the touring. In fact, they had a day off and like stopped at an airport because I think Ozzy had to fly somewhere.
No, that's not what happened. They stopped the bus because there was a malfunction in like I think the air conditioner for the bus. So they were trying to fix that. They did stop at an airfield, and the bus driver was also an amateur pilot. So he went and hopped in a plane and started taking band members for flights. And he would be buzzing the bus to try and get other band members to wake up. Randy was afraid of flying. He went up with the bus driver to get some aerial photos, and on the third time but trying to buzz the bus, the wing clipped the bus and the airplane crashed.
Stupidity.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah. So Not to be a downer, but that's what happened. I guess now we can talk about tracks.
He did a bang up job on this one for sure. His mark is definitely all over it. I would say, like, you know, just to give my own preferences, I think it's really unfortunate that it's so lopsided here, but side B, I think, is where Randy Rhoads and the songwriting actually really shines. Like, I really like Little Dolls and SATO, and Tonight is pretty good too, like just kind of rocking. And Diary of Madman is not really my favorite song. It could actually be like a King Diamond song, but Ozzy's voice just doesn't go there. But it is creepy, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And I think the opener is okay too. Over the Mountain.
I think that Over the Mountain and Flying High Again are probably the two best songs on the first side. You can't really kill rock and roll's okay, but there are other songs that do that same thing better, in my opinion. But I also do like SATO, and I do like Diary of a Madman. So really, it's kind of the opening and the closing of the album for me.
I think it opens with Over the Mountain, Flying High Again. I like Tonight and Diary of a Madman. SATO is pretty good as well.
I don't have a whole lot to add. I think I'm sort of team start strong and strong. I was a little sick of it in the middle. I do think it's a little weaker than the previous one. But I think, you know, not to get in the sophomore slump theory of Tracy fame, but I think a third album with Randy would have been like they would have figured it out. This thing got thrown out in a hurry. I have no idea what conditions this was produced under and who actually wrote what, but.
What's weird though is that I think I feel more strongly about the good tracks on this album than the first one. Like, I think that the ones on the first record, they're all right. You know, I can, you know, Crazy Train notwithstanding, because I already said I'm sick of it. But like, I think these, the where they hit, they really hit on this one. But there's just not that many of them.
I mean, part of that is colored. I don't necessarily disagree with you, although I love Mr. Crowley, so I like Mr. Crowley better than anything on here. But yeah, that is an interesting take, because I think if you stack everything else up, and it's really hard to do Crazy Train, because it, again, it's almost like Inner Sandman. I've heard it so damn much in my life that I don't have an unbiased opinion of it anymore. So yeah. I don't know where I was going with that, but
I didn't know these as well as the stuff on the previous album, which is maybe both better and worse.
Like, I knew Flying High Again because that's on radio a bit, and I think SAI Diary of Madman is. Over the Mountain, I actually know more because of a band that did a cover of it than I do Ozzy's version. I just think the cover's better than Ozzy's.
It happens.
Great, gentlemen. Who wants to start up for us?
I'll go first. I'm going to give this a B because I don't think that as an album it's quite as good as Blizzard, but it's not off the pace that much.
I'm shockingly, if you've heard other episodes, going to come right in there with a B as well for the same reason. It's weaker, I think, than the previous one, but, you know, in terms of metal, this is the last Randy we get, so. I think it's stronger than the next album.
Gabe, you want to go next door?
Yeah. I'm going to give this an 83.5. I'm basically between a B minus and a B for reasons that I've already stated, namely that it's just kind of unbalanced. And I find it unfortunate that this album just ended up as uneven as it did. Because I think that the good songs here are really quite good. It's not that I don't like, you know, Mr. Crowley or Crazy Train or Suicide Solution. It's just like, I think that they're all right.
I am right there with David and Ben tonight on these Ozzy albums. I'm going to give it a B as well. It's not as good as Wizard of Oz. It's just a little more uneven, just a little less as good.
So it goes.
As Wizard of Oz. That gives us an average of 85. Again, would you buy this, gentlemen?
I did. I probably still would.
I'd buy it on discount. If I saw it at a store for like $5-$10, I probably would buy it if I didn't have to pay full price for it.
I would definitely buy the tracks that I enjoy on here. I like them enough.
Probably not. I mean, I give it a B. And I don't think, I think as we get off the Biker Bar catalog, it's my ability to play it for randos declines.
That's how you decide whether you buy it, is whether you would just like play it for random people.
I mean, like my wife let me listen to that other album. This one, she was like, what is this one? I don't know. It's on
time. Yeah. I think that I would still buy it, you know, thinking about it somewhere. I don't know. I already said that I would, but it, precisely because it's Randy's last album.
Yeah. I would be more likely to buy it than an album that rhymes with Hark at the Hoon.
Whatever. Who are you talking about, David?
Speaking of Hark at the Hoon, what are you talking about, David?
Hark at the Hoon.
I'm talking about Hark at the Hoon. Ozzy Osbourne's third studio album that we're going to be reviewing in a matter of seconds.
We really need t-shirts.
But it'll feel like years to you on the
list. Yeah, at least a week or 2 or 3 days, something like that.
Thousands of years.
3 or 4 days, depending on
your time. An eternity.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to Underdome Heddle Reviews, and we'll talk to you later.
Ha ha!